Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and with me is a return guest, one of my favorite guests. It's Dr. Amanda Jansen, who is a professor in the School of Education, who also has a joint appointment with the Department of Mathematical Sciences at the University of Delaware, one of my favorite universities in Math Ed. So, Mandy, thanks
so
for
lucky.
Being back here.
It's an honor. I always enjoy talking with you, Sam. Thanks for asking me.
And we're going to talk this time about Mandy's book, Rough Draft Math, Revising to Learn. And people might have heard of this book. It's been out for a little while. It's gotten a lot of conversation in Math Ed, but I wanted to go right to the source and sort of hear from you about this book and about Rough Draft Math. So I want to first ask you about what it's like to imagine a class or to see a class that's using rough draft math. It's like if there's rough draft talk, if there's rough draft thinking, what does that look like, sound like?
So this is the kind of environment where you hear students sharing their thinking, but they're not really sure. They might have an air of hesitancy. They might be sharing thoughts that are incomplete. Clearly the work is still in progress. People are comfortable just putting it out there. And the work is treated as valuable in that current state, but also the group workshops and tries to improve and revises the thinking. And so really in these kinds of settings, people are using talking not to perform maybe how smart we are, but to really keep learning through talking, to keep learning through writing, and really downplaying this performance notion of participating in math class. So students' thinking is central. They're using their voices. They're using discourse. Their students' thinking is displayed. You see public records of student work, students up at the document camera, or snapshots of students' thinking in Desmos being shared and talked about, both what's going well in the thinking, how the emergent thinking has strengths, not just focused on fixing, but trying to grow the thinking. The goal of learning in these rooms is not to necessarily get to an answer quickly, but it's to try to make sense, to try to understand and to keep exploring. And revising is happening in these classrooms. Students are revisiting ideas that they had earlier in the lesson or maybe a few days ago. They're revisiting that thinking. They're trying to keep improving it. Maybe they're having opportunities to revise assessments. Could be any opportunity they have to rethink and explicitly engage in revision. And just there's this overall spirit of trial and error and putting it out there.
And if it's rough right now, that's okay. We'll work on it together. We'll try to, polish it. We'll try to refine it.
Yeah, because that's how we learn anything, just by putting it out there, trying it on, comparing your thinking to someone else, and how can you together generate something new that neither of you would have been able to understand without hearing each other's drafts.
Yeah. To me, it stands in contrast to what math classrooms are often known for or kind of lamented over, which is like in a math class, if you speak or if you share something, it should be the correct answer. And like that's kind of the tradition or the, the norms that we're kind of pushing against. And rough draft is 180 from that. Rough draft is like, no, we want to hear things that are your first idea, your rough idea, and we'll work on it together. And that will be kind of in the spirit of learning.
It's just sharing your thinking. How are you making sense out of this? And we can learn from each other. And one thing I think about in classrooms that really are emphasizing drafting and revising, I think about the work of Magdalene Lampert, and she talks about intellectual courage and intellectual humility. It takes courage to share your thinking when it's early stages. Mm-hmm. And it takes humility to keep pushing yourself to revise and extend and elaborate or consolidate your ideas, to just keep going, keep working on something. That takes a level of humility, this notion of I can learn from other people, and then the courage to believe that other people want to learn from you too.
Mm-hmm. So that makes me think it's something that we need for society overall, like that we don't always come out with our right answer, our firm position that's never going to move, and you kind of want to bash other people over the head with it, but instead be more like, I'm trying to make sense of this. Can we do it together? Can I get some feedback? Like that would be good for our world. But we don't have to go in that direction.
I love that connection. That's excellent.
So the book is Rough Draft Math, and it's published by Stenhouse Publishers. But there's kind of, a background. There's a backstory to this book. In the book, you mentioned Barnes's idea of exploratory talk. There's also an article that you wrote with colleagues that was published in Mathematics Teaching in the Middle School that was also about rough draft math. But I want to know sort of when did you get hooked on the idea? And what made you sort of think, I'm going to think about this for years and I'm going to think about it in different venues. What was it that kind of got you hooked onto it?
I think there's two versions to that story. So one version is I came to the ideas that you see in this book And in the article on math teaching in the middle school through a study group I conducted with secondary teachers in Delaware, we were thinking together about classroom discourse. We were reading chapters from a book called Exploring Talk in School that was dedicated to the work of Douglas Barnes. And we were thinking about what would it mean to create exploratory talk in our math classrooms. And the teachers in the study group were offering teaching practices that they thought would be more exploratory for students. The group wanted to change the term from exploratory talk to rough draft talk, which is also part of Barnes and Mercer's thinking as well. And they thought rough draft made more sense to students because they had experiences thinking about that concept from language arts. Mm-hmm. So everything I know about rough draft math comes from collaborations with teachers. And it seems to be a generative concept. So you ask about why I could keep working on it. Because rough drafting and revising is just an idea. There's not one way to do it. And so every time I speak with a teacher about what's useful for them about it, my own thinking keeps revising and expanding. And so that's why it ended up not stopping at an 1800 word article, because teachers kept sharing with me. But I really came to rough draft talk as a concept back in grad school, actually. I went to grad school at Michigan State University, just like Sam, at different points in time. And I was attracted to graduate studies because I thought I wanted to cure the world of math anxiety, right? And I had conjectures that math anxiety was closer to something like performance anxiety. I relate to people's math anxiety by thinking about how I feel in PE class when you have to demonstrate a skill in front of everyone and maybe you don't think you're very good at it and you have to do this in public.
Right. Hey, do a pull-up right now in front of everybody.
Yeah, I couldn't do the arm hang. I would just fall. And I think people feel like that in math class when they're asked to share their thinking if it's this environment where the goal is to be correct quickly. And so I think a lot of the reason why these ideas are attractive to me is that it's rooted in something I've cared about since I was a classroom teacher, but it's a different way of getting at something I value.
So you mentioned how this idea of rough draft math, you know, it can generate a lot of other connections and ideas and it can go a lot of places. I wanted to ask you about how you see rough draft math relating to some other ideas that are out there in the, you know, the space of math education conversations. So there's a lot of talk about making room for errors and making your classroom a place where mistakes are welcomed as learning opportunities. People talk about making sure that failure is accepted in as part of learning. How do you see rough draft math related to that sort of issue of just welcoming mistakes into the classroom?
That resonates with me. I have also heard people make those kinds of connections, and I see it as related in spirit, but not identical in a number of ways. I don't see rough draft math as only about maybe analyzing your errors and correcting and learning from that process. It's not that, but it's more than that. It's that plus more. So to me, revising isn't just about fixing something that might be incorrect in a procedure. It's about expanding our ideas. Revising can be about elaborating on your thinking. It can be about making a new connection that you didn't make before. It could be about layering on a new representation to illustrate relationships so then it's more illuminating for yourself and others. It could be trying on new terminology that you're not really sure about yet, but you want to try on these words from the discipline of mathematics. And it could be about getting more precise. And so the notion here is you can have something that's on paper theoretically correct, but you could keep extending your thinking. You can keep learning from that. So we can constantly revise and grow. Like having a correct answer isn't really the goal. It's about understanding more and more. Math as a discipline has so many connections. So you could keep making new connections all of the time. You can have a proof that's technically not incorrect and a justification that's working, a solution that's correct. All of that can still be revised. So the proof could become more elegant, for instance, or the justification might become more illuminating and communicative to others, convince other people, not just yourself. Or you could add in some representation, something like that. Maybe you can find another correct solution strategy, and then your revision and your thinking is more than one solution that works, but also those connections between those solutions. So yes, we can learn from our mistakes and error analysis can be a part of rough draft math, but it's only one piece of this larger picture.
Right. Okay. I want to also talk about some of the voices and like perspectives that are in the book. So you're the author of the book, but as I'm reading it, there's a lot of other voices that come in, and you seem to really bring a variety of teachers' voices front and center into the book. You bring examples from different contexts, different classrooms. I'm wondering if you have like a favorite sort of quote or a little, you know, illustration that's in the book.
It's like asking a parent, pick your favorite child. So I am so fortunate that teachers have been open about their practice with me and keep sharing in dialogue what they're doing in their classrooms. So then this book is like a curation of all of these stories and examples that teachers have shared with me. They've shared video with me. They participated in interviews with me. They've sent me ideas on Twitter. So I'll share two that I really like in this book. And so one is in chapter 4. Molly Brinich is a math teacher in Delaware, and she teaches math through inviting students to make claims about what they think is true. And then as a class, they choose some claims that they're going to focus on. And then, so they do some exploratory work and they make some claims about something. And so maybe they, I think in that chapter, they made a claim about you get one scaled copy, like a similar figure, by adding the same number to each side. That was a claim students made. Mm-hmm. And so then they explored it. Is this true? Is it not? Under what conditions? Mm-hmm. And so the students are working as a class to justify or refute student-generated claims. And so I love writing about Molly's work because when a class is structured about students' claims about what they think is true, many students have something to offer. They can make conjectures. And then there are lots of ways to contribute to the class. You can generate a claim, you can argue against a claim, you can justify the claim, and then they have knowledge. They have knowledge and ownership of the mathematics is truly theirs. But the other reason why I like this case mm-hmm. is I met Molly when she was a student teacher taking a class with me, mm-hmm. and I've stayed in contact with her for years. And so to be able to be a part of someone's life over years is very mm-hmm. meaningful. Mm-hmm. And then the other example I'd like to share is Eli Tinkleman is a mathematics teacher in Virginia, and he has a practice that I think is very usable, whereas teaching with claims and refuting and justifying them is pretty elaborate. What Eli was saying is, so I teach revision by doing what I call revise the warm-up. He gives students a warm-up problem that's related to the lesson that day, but they can work on it with their prior knowledge. They work on it for a while, they set it aside, and they don't really debrief it. Mm-hmm. Then they have the lesson, and then at the end of the class, pull your warm-up problem back out, use a different color writing utensil or a pen if you're writing in pencil, mm-hmm. and put your revision on that same piece of paper, but you can see mm-hmm. how your thinking evolved during the lesson. Mm-hmm. And that's something, it's a very low lift. Take this warm-up problem, don't debrief it, and then revise it at the end. So why do I like that one? Not just that it's highly usable, but it came to me through Twitter. So mm-hmm. I love that teachers have been sharing on Twitter with me mm-hmm. what they've tried in the spirit of rough drafting. So I learned about that from Eli mm-hmm. through Twitter, which I think is cool.
No, yeah, that's great. We have a team at the University of Missouri and University of Missouri-St. Louis and University of Florida, and we're trying to think about what are some small sorts of changes, very doable kinds of practices that teachers can incorporate. And just recently, we were talking about warm-ups and just kind of think about what are some pretty doable, modest kind of changes to warm-ups, but that might start to enrich the class experience and the talk that could happen or something. And so this is a great one, right? Like, okay, we still have the warm-up. That's a routine that a lot of teachers use. But here's a little tweak that we can do to the warm-up, and it might lead to some different kinds of conversations.
And that's one thing that's been exciting to me about this rough drafting work, hearing about how teachers fit these ideas and the spirit of drafting and revising into their current practice. It didn't mean they have to change their curriculum materials. They didn't have to fully dramatically revise how they teach. Mm-hmm. They can make these small changes that make a difference, and then maybe it takes them in a direction over time as they work on drafting, but you can do these smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. Even asking students, it's okay, share your draft ideas. It's fine. We'll revise them. I'm open to hearing your drafts. You can feel the room. It's like letting the air out of a balloon. Mm-hmm. Like the pressure gets reduced for students. Yeah. So even that move is a light move that can make a big difference. Mm-hmm.
So first of all, before I forget, can you let us know where to find the book?
Oh, thanks for asking. So the best price for the book is at the Stenhouse website, but more importantly, on the Stenhouse website, that's my publisher, you can read the first chapter for free. And there's a study guide that you can download if you want to read it in a professional learning community or talk to colleagues about the ideas in the book. So we wrote a study guide to support book clubs if people want to have one.
And that's stenhouse.com?
Yes.
All right. Where can they find you on Twitter, by the way?
At Mandy Math Ed on Twitter, please.
So
keep sharing with me.
But because, you know, in the spirit of always revising and always kind of growing, where are these ideas taking you next? Do you have something else that you're kind of working on?
I have been spending years just understanding what this practice can look like in various ways from teachers. But one thing that's come out is that teachers enact rough drafting with different ideas in the foreground, prioritize different aspects of drafting. Maybe some people focus on creating a safe space in the classroom. Others focus on how tasks really support students with working on developing their understanding through communication. Other people get really interested in different kinds of revision experiences and routines. Other folks are very interested in the power of rough drafting to create an asset-based learning environment. So people are keying into this idea in different ways. And so I want to do more to understand different ways that teachers take this up and why. So this year I'm conducting a series of interviews with teachers from different school districts and states who have either had some professional learning experiences, maybe a book club, and we're trying to understand different ways teachers are taking up rough drafting and revising and investigating not just how they are enacting rough drafting, but situating these efforts in their histories, asking them about their histories as math students, as math teachers, to see how this fits into their storylines, their narratives about their professional lives and their mathematical lives, but also how it relates to their visions of how they see their work going in the future. Because I'm meeting people at a particular point in time, but they're on a journey, right? So how do their different ways of taking up rough draft help us think about their journeys and where they're headed? The reason for doing that is people ask me all the time, how do you help someone try to do this, even convince someone that this might be worth their time? And I don't really have a lot of wisdom about that yet, because I've been working with teachers who've chosen to collaborate with me. And so maybe if I understand the different journeys of the folks who have chosen to collaborate and think about these ideas, it can help me learn about where other people are at on their journeys, and we can learn together from there.
And speaking of the teacher's journeys, like a big part of the journey right now is making it through the pandemic and all the stresses and, you know, emotional toll that has been for everybody. So it seems like this might be a good time to, hey, rough draft is one way to kind of relieve that pressure on the students and on the math classroom community. Like, hey, we can kind of relax a little bit and we can learn together. But the nice thing is that relieving the pressure also can actually enhance the learning. We can actually have better, deeper, more inclusive learning that happens from it. So it seems like this is a good time to sort of be trying to emphasize that.
Thanks for saying that. I agree. The other piece with that is, as I collaborate with school districts and I think with teachers about rough drafting, the adults, the professionals, the teachers have found it useful to relieve pressure on themselves to treat our own work in improving teaching as a draft that's constantly under revision. Mm-hmm. And not to be too cheesy, but I've found it useful for my life. If I orient myself toward, I'm a work in progress, I have the right to keep revising and growing, it feels pretty liberating. Mm-hmm. So teachers, we need this right now too. We need to be able to feel free to try things out, treat them as drafts. We're in a world that's very different than the world we used to live in, and we're figuring it out together.
Mm-hmm. All right, I do want to have a fun question to end.
Yay!
And you've been here a few times, but so what I want to just do is think about, okay, we're continuing forward in time, and the next year, the new year is coming. Do you have anything kind of fun or that you're looking forward to next year?
I would say I'm looking forward to getting back into pinball again. Prior to COVID lockdown, I was playing pinball Wednesday nights in a women's league. I was on monthly tournaments, and I've been hesitant to get back into that.
Well, I remember when you visited Mizzou, it was kind of like, which pinball? And we're like, hey, we have multiple pinball
places.
Yes,
I got to play pinball in Columbia.
Do super well during the pandemic, I'm guessing. That's
a barcade in Wilmington, Delaware went out of business during the pandemic, yeah. And my mom and I take trips together periodically every few years, and she's turning 75 next year in the summer of in 2022, and we are planning a trip overseas, hopefully, if we can do it, in July. And so I'm looking forward to spending about 3 weeks with my mom. I know one of the the ports is Copenhagen. I'm not really sure about the range of places because it seems so far away, and I'm not sure we'll actually go, but I'm hopeful we'll get to.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, it's been good talking to you, and congratulations on the, continued conversations about the book. It's great to see it in the world.
Thanks for talking.